Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I want to start off by saying welcome back, Meghna, your first day back with us after your maternity leave. Welcome back. And how does it feel?
Well, thank you. It feels great, Anthony. But I'm glad I have your attention because, Anthony, and to everyone listening out there in Radio Land, you've got to forgive me if I'm rusty here these first few days back because I'm a bit out of practice. I can change a diaper. I can calm a fussy baby. But the whole radio thing, it'll be fine after a while.
It'll come right back. But I got to say, for someone who's been taking care of a brand new baby, you're looking remarkably rested.
Thank you.
And it's good to have you back. And we're glad you made it, especially given the extreme weather we're having. 7.5 feet of snow since January 23rd. We're closing in on the most snow in one season in Boston's recorded history.
And so Boston Mayor Marty Walsh announced today that the city's parking ban will remain in effect until further noticed, and that drivers in general should try to stay off roads around the city after 6 o'clock tonight, meaning that plows and their efforts to clear streets, those plows are going to be the few things, on wheels actually operating right now. Because as we all know, the MBTA, well, it's running limited service today, and the T has been completely shut down multiple times already this season.
And the T's problems this winter came as no surprise to many people who say the system has been underfunded and inadequately maintained for years. Here's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh speaking this morning.
The MBTA situation goes a lot deeper than the snow we're having today and yesterday and the last month of snowstorms. I think it's, unfortunately for the T, it seems like it's been a perfect storm.
A perfect storm, yes. But the T's woes aren't caused by an act of God or nature, but rather, perhaps, by a literal act, a state law, an act of politics. So we're going to take a look at how we got to this point at all today and what the best way is to ensure that we have a reliable public transit system, regardless of the weather, going forward. So we'd love to hear your questions and your perhaps even solutions for the MBTA, especially if you're a regular transit rider. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, we've got two experts with us to help us figure out how to fix the T. James Aloisi served as Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation in 2009, and he's currently principal at the Pemberton Square Group, a consulting firm. He joins us from the studio in Portland, Maine. Jim Aloisi, great to talk to you again.
Nice to be with you.
Also with us today in the studio is Charles Chipio. He's a research fellow at the Ash Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government and head of Chipio Strategies, a public policy firm. Charlie, great to have you back as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. So first of all, you guys oftentimes may come at things from different perspectives, but there is one thing that you and I would say most people who have been following the transit story for a while agree on, that the T's problems didn't just happen suddenly, but they are the result of decades of some underinvestment, or a lot of underinvestment, depending, again, on your perspective. But I do want to say that I think there is sort of a year zero here when we're talking about a definable point that the financial problems begin to coalesce. And I'm referring to July 2000, a major turning point in the T's history, when the state legislature passed something that's known as forward funding. So, Charlie, let me just start with you. For people who don't really understand what forward funding is, could you just give us the quick 101 on what it is and why it's important for the T?
Sure. It sort of sounds amazing now to say this, but up until that time, the way that the T was funded was at the end of each year, they literally went back to the legislature and said, here's what we spent last year. When can we expect the check? And so, as you can imagine, that was not a real wise way in which to fund the T. So what forward funding did was essentially the idea was to put them on a diet. And the short version is that they would essentially be funded by revenue from one penny of the sales tax, assessments on all the communities that were served by the T, and then whatever the T could raise from fares, from advertising, from they have extensive real estate holdings, things like that. So the idea was a good one. The problem was that a couple of things. One was that the soon after this happened, all internet purchases and all these kind of things happened, which we were exempt from the sales tax. So sales tax revenue never reached what we thought at the time it was going to reach. And the other problem was that many of the expectations that were in the T's finance plan proved to be unworkable and unrealistic. And so a combination of those things meant that there is not enough money.
Not enough money. Okay. So, Jim, but in addition to the forward funding, when the legislature actually passed that bill, there also came along a huge amount of debt related to the big dig. And this is another central part of the T's financial story. So can you just briefly tell us again, Jim, how that happened? Because, I mean, you were chief legal counsel working on the big dig at the time.
So let's distinguish between big dig debt and legacy debt. When the MBTA was forward funded in 2000, it did not start with a clean slate. Charlie said the legislature wanted to put the T on a diet. I think we now know that what the T needs is nourishment. It doesn't need a diet. What happened in the year 2000, it was that the legislature said, here's a penny on the sales tax. Go ahead and run with that. But what it didn't do is start with a clean slate. So it began the T's life at forward funding time began with over $2 billion of legacy debt that went back to the 1960s. Then as a result of required clean air mitigation requirements to make the big dig happen, another $2 billion of debt was added to the T. And so now you've got a situation where the MBTA has over $5 billion worth of debt, and its annual debt service is close to $500 million a year. It's close to $500 million a year. It's not sustainable, particularly when it doesn't even collect in fares much more than what it's paying out in debt service. So one of the things that I think both myself and Charlie have said over the past week that people are saying and we can agree to is that one of the first terms solutions here is to relieve the T of a significant portion of that debt.
Mm. I want to get to that in more detail in just a minute, but there's still something that, forgive me, because as much as I try to understand the world of finance, I just don't understand this. And that is, if mitigation efforts for the big dig, you know, were so important and the T was a part of that and there was debt incurred for those mitigation efforts, why was that money, I mean, not given to the T? What happened to those mitigation projects? Why are they not fully funded? Did the money go into the ground for the big dig? What happened there?
But I think you hit on the question and why why the mention of these mitigation requirements make the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because this was insanity. I mean, this was a situation in which you had 14 projects that now account for almost half of the T's debt simply mandated with no way to pay for any of it. And the reality is that along with underfunding is one of the main reasons why the T is so underfunded, why there's so much things are not being maintained. And the issue to me is it really doesn't matter whether you say the T is responsible or the Commonwealth is responsible. How in the world can you mandate billions of dollars worth of spending, which, by the way, is a different issue, but I would argue had very limited amounts to do with clean air, to be spent, and to mandate exactly what the T would be spending money on for 20 some odd years going forward and with no way to pay for any of it. I mean, that is the question that which I keep harping on because it needs to never be repeated again.
Jim, do you have an answer to that question?
Well, I just want to make a point about this issue of T debt. It's a way that the big dig was financed. It's a way that we keep masking the problem for people. Whether it was the big dig or whether it was the accelerated bridge program of several years ago, we pay for these big projects by bonding and borrowing and by trying to shift the costs. So the big dig, the Turnpike Authority, which we had to abolish in 2009 because it was not sustainable, the Turnpike Authority took on a huge amount of debt. The T took on a huge amount of debt. Massport took on a lesser amount of debt. And with both the big dig and the accelerated bridge program, we borrowed. And we borrowed against future federal payments. Now, what does all that do? It masks the problem for people because people just observe that things are being built. Things are happening, and they don't understand how it's being financed. And over this whole period of time, no gas tax increase, no ability to confront the need for net new revenue. The only people who got increased were the people who were using the T. There were 5 or 6 T fare increases in a period of time when there was no gas tax increase. And so we've come to a point in the Commonwealth where we have no modal funding equity and no money to get the job done. And I think the only silver lining in all of this is that it's presented to people an opportunity moment to transition from an auto-centric financing system to one that's more modally equitable and to get people to realize that net new revenue is necessary.
Okay, well, I just want to jump in here because I want to drive straight to what I think is, in my mind, a core point that comes up every few years when the T basically completely breaks down. One is that I don't think there's any dispute that it is an absolutely essential part of the infrastructure of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secondly, ridership has been growing. I mean, we see more. I mean, the T regularly in the past several years has put out these wonderfully positive reports of, I don't know how many it is now, but 1 million-plus riders.
About 1.3 million.
1.3 million riders. So more and more people rely on it. Now we're talking about how the sum of the financial woes, and we don't really have a ton of time to dig into the management issues and the pension issues and the union issues, et cetera, but these core financial woes, which were actually, in a sense, partially created by political acts, why can't they be solved by a political act? Where is the will?
I can throw a quick one in there about that. One is, I certainly think both Jim and I would agree with you that it is absolutely critical to the well-being of the Commonwealth. The problem is getting representatives and senators from outside 495 to understand that, and even more critically, getting those representatives and those senators to get their constituents to understand that. I think too often people outside the greater Boston area honestly don't understand just how important it is to them.
Well, we have a Senate president in Stan Rosenberg who just recently said, Democrat from Amherst, who said, as you know, even though there have been a lot of complaints that the legislature has tilted too far towards Boston, he does say that when it comes to transportation and economic development, he agrees with that. He thinks the center of gravity is too much in the greater Boston area. So it doesn't sound like there's much hope to get any consensus around fixing the T's financial problems, Jim.
Well, I think we need to build a platform for both modal equity and regional equity. There isn't any question about it. And if we're going to have to solve the T's problems, and we do have to solve them, we also can't neglect the issues that are faced by each of the regional transit authorities. So there's a way to do this that creates regional equity and that is modally equitable. And I think that's got to be the focus. And I know Stan Rosenberg well. I know he's been around very long. He's very smart. He has got to represent the interests of his neck of the woods out in western central part of the Massachusetts. And I think that can be done in a way that doesn't necessarily mean the T doesn't get fixed. Regional and modal equity are complementary approaches to getting the solve done.
But when we talk about regional and modal equity like that, I mean, I take your point because it's very difficult to ask people who may never step foot on the MBTA that, you know, you have to do your part as well. But how do we change the conversation on Beacon Hill, you know, to begin with, to say, now's the time? I mean, we may have more winters like this, who knows, every year from now on. I mean, how much more sort of transportation paralysis can we deal with before we get some action on Beacon Hill?
I think someone should do, and maybe they've done it already, an analysis of what the economy has lost over the past several days and what it will continue to lose by people not being able to work, by people having all these disruptions. My guess is that number is going to be so high that it won't be bearable. And so I think we're at a point in terms of the legislature where if you want Massachusetts and the greater Boston area to drive the economy, to be the innovation sector that we all expect it to be, if you want people are not going to come to Massachusetts and live here and invest here because of the weather. There's got to be another reason for it. And that reason ought to be an exciting greater metropolitan area where mobility is easy and pleasant and convenient like it is in great cities, not just across this country, but the world.
Charles Chibiola, let me ask you, if you could wave a magic wand right now and say, we are going to do X to help the T shed its debt yoke, essentially. What would you do?
I would have the Commonwealth take over some of the debt. I would put an immediate stop on all expansion other than this Green Line expansion. That's one of the last pieces of this legally mandated big dig mitigation. I would set up a series of performance metrics, and I would tie T funding to that, understanding that at first they don't really have the capacity to be very aggressive in terms of what they can get done. But as they get more money in, ratchet that up, and more base the T's funding on and how much debt we take away from them on how they can achieve those metrics.
If the Commonwealth takes over some of the T's debt, could that in any way, shape, or form damage, say, the Commonwealth's bond rating?
Oh, yes. I think it could. I mean, the timing of this stuff is never good. And of course, you know, this is coming at a time when the Commonwealth has its own fiscal problems. But, you know, the Commonwealth is living large compared to the finances of the T. Mm.
And Jim, what about the people out there? I'm actually seeing a couple tweets here. For example, one from Alex Niehaus, who says, stop the endless complaining about finances and demonstrate management competence before new funds arrive. So the continued call for, again, that reform before revenue, which we've heard from state government, and even we've got at least one writer here who says, yes, no more money before the other problems of the T get fixed.
Well, frankly, those are not well-informed opinions. I'm just going to be blunt about it. We did reform back in 2009, and we did it without revenue. There's very little left to reform meaningfully. Now, you can say, well, we're gonna fire 10 people, and we're gonna have a speck around the margins. What we're talking about is substantial net new revenue that's needed in order to fix critical infrastructure. We're talking about needing money that's in the billions, with a B, billions of dollars. And so, sure, the MBTA should be managed well, and the MBTA should be managed prudently, and it should be managed with an eye toward fiscal prudence. But there is no room anymore to argue that only reform is going to solve this. What we need to do, I agree with Charlie, let's relieve the T of a substantial portion of debt. Let's hold them to metrics that they can achieve. We should hold the highway department to metrics, too. Let's be
absolutely
modally equitable.
Yep.
Where I disagree is on, he knows this, on expansion. There are some critical capacity-oriented expansions that must go forward, like connecting the blue and the red line, in my opinion. Because don't forget, in the springtime, when there's no snow and ice, people will still not be able to get on a red line, an orange line car at brush hour because they're at capacity. We need
to solve that problem. Let me ask you, though, because you said we're talking about billions of dollars necessary here, but both Governor Baker and House Speaker Robert DeLeo have said they're not going to raise taxes. So if taxes are off the table and the political will for the state to assume some of the debt of the T, maybe that's questionable, too. Are there any other options for the billions of dollars of an additional revenue that you say is needed to really help this transit system?
No. I mean, look, the answer, I think Charlie and I are both saying there's one option that can open up potentially several hundred million dollars right away in the shorter term, and that's relief of debt. So you don't have to raise a tax, a fee, or a fare to do that. Once you get past that, which is a nice thing to start with but not enough, there is no magic solution to it. We need to find a way either to raise net new revenue or to stop doing discretionary highway projects and transferring highway project money to transit and begin the process of leveling the playing field. There aren't any easy solutions to this.
I would just say two quick things. One is that I think that what Jim says here is important, that we need to start looking at this as one transportation system and stop looking at it as if all these different modes live in separate worlds. Because, you know, when you need to get from here to there, you don't really care what mode you take. And so I think that's one thing in terms of flexing money back and forth. We need to have the ability to do that. The other thing that I think is absolutely critical is that the T needs more money, but we need to buy reform with that money. We need to fix the T's just messed up pension system. We need to get rid of these the system that makes the T bus operations cost twice as much as anybody else because they can't outsource anything. We need to buy reform with this money as well.
Well, I wonder, final quick thought in just a couple seconds, if we as residents of the Commonwealth need to start holding ourselves accountable as well, because just last November we had voters eliminate the fact that the state was supposed to index its gas tax to inflation, meaning we just don't want to pay for stuff, Jim.
And anybody who's listening to this program now, hear me now. If you have been discomforted and inconvenienced and troubled by what's happened with the T over the past few weeks, you have to email, you have to write, you have to call your legislator. Then you have to say, we voters will support you in an effort to do something game-changing and dramatic. The people's voices need to be heard, and if they're not, then this will repeat itself in a way that people won't like.
Well, James Aloisi served as Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation in 2009. He's currently principal at the Pemberton Square Group. Jim, always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Megan.
And Charles Chipio, Research Fellow at the Ash Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation at Harvard and head of Chipio Strategies. Great to speak with you as well. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Magna.
Stay with us. Coming up next, snow on your roofs, ice dams, carbon monoxide, and flooded basements. How to protect you and your house from this savage winter weather. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.